like an animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animal. Talking animal.
Good morning, this is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Melanie Sue Bowles, co-founder of Proud Spirit Horse Sanctuary in Wilkesboro, North Carolina. Bowles, who alongside her husband Jim has shepherded the sanctuary through nearly 35 years of challenges, changes, and relocations in service of rescuing horses and providing them refuge, will recall the unlikely beginnings of Proud Spirit. Describing themselves as not horse people, the Bowles launched the sanctuary on a mere five-acre parcel of land in Miyaka City, Florida, while both held jobs as firefighter paramedics with Sarasota County. Larger properties followed, 50 acres, again in Miyaka City, then 320 in Arkansas, and so on, corresponding to their growing herd of rescued horses. We'll chart the evolution of Proud Spirit over three-plus decades, including reaching a point where they realized it was time to downshift. So they stopped taking in horses and resettled on a smaller parcel, this time in their long-dreamed-about location of the mountains of North Carolina. On a somewhat parallel path, Melanie Sue Bowles has become an accomplished author, writing three nonfiction books about various aspects of Proud Spirit, before moving more recently into writing novels for young readers aged 8 and up. Meanwhile, a programming note, I'll be away next week, so the April 15th show will be hosted by the fabulous Bev Capshaw. Her guest that day will be Robin Mazo of Urgent Cats of Tampa Bay. Urgent Cats represents a group of independent volunteers working to promote awareness of the many animals available for adoption at Hillsborough County Pet Resource Center. Also joining that conversation will be Nadia Palomino, who helps maintain the Urgent Cats website and social media pages. So that's next week, April 15th, on Talking Animals on WMNF. Coming up later on today's program, I'll talk with Doug Boer, one of the organizers of Stand Up for Dogs, an event pegged to National Dogfighting Awareness Day, happening tonight, April 8th, at the Dog Bar in St. Petersburg. Fundamentally, the event aims to help end organized dog fighting by passing the Bipartisan Fight Act. And the evening will feature elements ranging from special guest speakers to adoptable rescue dogs to the essential coffee from Roxy's Coffee. So more on Stand Up for Dogs when Doug Boer joins us just a bit later in the show on Talking Animals on WNF. Right now, though, let's get into our conversation with Melanie Sue Bowles. With a reminder, I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj at wmnf.org, or you could text 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Melanie Sue Bowles back to Talking Animals. Good morning, Melanie.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us again on Talking Animals. Happy to speak with you yet again. It's been a few times over the years that we've chatted, so I always look forward to another occasion like this. So
yes.
With Proud Spirit spanning an arc of nearly 35 years, surely there must be multiple milestones, I guess, would be the best way to put it, that stand out to you. So, but really the beginning, I guess, is pivotal, and I mentioned in the introduction, I recall you saying back then, you and Jim weren't really horse people. So even now, maybe especially now, all these years later, that sounds counterintuitive and kind of improbable. Remind me what not being horse people meant.
Well, I wasn't a horse crazy kid. I didn't grow up on a farm. I had no desire to have a pony or a ride or any of that. And the same with Jim. He was, you know, he grew up in a suburb of Cleveland, Ohio, and he was never around horses. And what led to it was our jobs as firefighters. It was a stressful job, a great job. We loved our careers. But in an effort to, you know, we lived in town. We just were normal in-town people. And but in an effort to kind of simplify our lives, we decided to move out to the country while still working. And we were surrounded by people who had horses. Everyone had a horse or two or three. And I just became so intrigued. That's kind of what got the ball rolling.
So you just kind of backed into it because that's kind of what was happening where you guys had relocated just for your own day-to-day life and enjoyment.
Yeah, we just wanted the peace and quiet of the country, and we bought a home on 5 acres, and it seemed at that time to just be this massive amount of land.
And did you buy that piece, that first piece of land, the 5 acres, thinking, well, we're going to certainly do something with this? Or do you just think, well, we want to have space, we've made this move out of the city, and this is the kind of thing we want to have? Not at that point thinking, hey, maybe we'll rescue horses.
Oh, no, not at all. That was the furthest from my mind. It was just for the peace and quiet of the country. And we didn't have any plans for the land at all. We just wanted to leave it the way it was and just enjoy being in the country. And
apart from being surrounded by people that were horse people, how did you go from that sort of situation where you agreed you had the land, but you really didn't have the history or particularly the interest, it sounds like, initially? So how did that turn into, hey, guess what? We're rescuing horses now.
Well, life is full of contradictions. I just started meeting more and more neighbors, and everyone, literally everyone, had a horse. And the more neighbors I met and the more I kind of socialized with them and were introduced to their horses and met their horses. And I just really became intrigued with them. And I decided I wanted to get one.
So you're kind of the outlier. It was almost like kind of a cool form of peer pressure, really, it sounds like. Was like,
yeah,
everybody around us has horses. Maybe we should get a horse.
Yeah. And the horse I brought home could not have been a worse match for a novice. Absolutely the worst decision to purchase this mare. She was not well trained at all. She was she had a lot of opinion. I couldn't handle her. I couldn't even ride her. She just was the worst horse for a novice, but it was not her fault. I felt everyone kept telling me to get rid of her.
Who is this, by the way? Who are we talking about? I think this sounds familiar. Horse?
My very first horse.
What was the name, though? I guess I'm asking.
I'm sorry. Her name was Cody.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, I've spoken about her before.
Sure.
But I decided it wasn't her fault, and just because I didn't know what I was doing. And I was just going to, I wanted to keep her. I wasn't going to shuffle her around. I think that was one of the things that I really had discovered early on, was that horses get shuffled around like a piece of furniture. And we disregard the bonds they form and the comfort of a life they know. It's very disturbing to them to move them around so much. And but I decided I was going to keep her. I would just find another horse. And it was actually in that search for a second horse who I found, perfectly beautifully trained, well-trained, calm quarter horse. He was perfect for me. But it was in that search for a second horse that I discovered so much mistreatment. And that kind of sparked the idea of taking in horses who are at risk or in need.
Yeah, because that's the thing. I mean, the idea about being, initially at least, non-horse people decided, you know, sort of take on what seems like kind of a pretty challenging task, because it's not just like it could have gone, I guess, a different way than it did go with Cody. But it's not like you're just sort of taking in a horse that needs a place to hang out. I mean, you're taking in horses in many of these cases that have experienced some sort of trauma or neglect, at least, maybe even abuse. It's quite a different thing. They need a place to kind of hang their head. We'll put them there. But you're taking it on full speed with the kind of most challenging scenario, it sounds like, at least with Cody, which, again, I guess it was luck of the draw. It could have gone a different way. Could have been like horse number two, I guess. That might have shifted what you guys did.
Well, that's very possible. We never know, do we? Exactly. But I quickly learned that horses should never be alone. So I would have gone searching for a second horse regardless.
Regardless.
And as I went from barn to barn, I went to, I just saw so many disturbing things, and it was, did spark the interest in making a difference.
Yeah. So this is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Melanie Sue Bowles, co-founder of Proud Spirit Horse Sanctuary in Wilkesboro, North Carolina. We've kind of gathered here today really partly to ask Melanie to reflect on nearly 35 years of horse rescue. She's also an accomplished author, having written novels for young readers and nonfiction books as well. So if you'd like to ask Melanie a question about horses and her rescue, other things that come to mind, or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. You can send an email to dj@wmnf.org, or you can text 813-433-0885. It actually looks like we might have a caller right off the bat, so let's see what they have in mind. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Melanie Sue Bowles. Hello, it's you. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Melanie Sue Bowles. Oh, looks like we might have lost you. Okay, well, hopefully they'll call back. 813-239-9663. So, Melanie, can you describe some notable elements of traveling the learning curve as you first stepped into this kind of unfamiliar world?
Well, I was told repeatedly that as more and more horse people, experienced horse people, learned that I was going to had the desire to open a sanctuary, I was told over and over and over that I would fail. I didn't know enough about horses. I was going to be doing more damage to the horses. A lot of horrible things people said to me.
Wow.
And but I have a very strong personality, and I have a very determined personality, and I set myself on a path of educating myself about horses and learning everything I could, how to handle them, proper nutrition, just everything. And so much advice I got, I went against from people trying to tell me that I wasn't going to be able to do this, that I was going to fail. And but as time went on, I really listened to my heart and my gut, and we have an exemplary reputation for the care that we provide for these horses and the respect and acknowledgement of what they need beyond physical care, beyond nutrition, but emotionally. And that's the thing that I'm the most proud of. The cornerstone of Proud Spirit was that we would not separate herd mates. Horses form extremely strong bonds. I don't think there's horse people that don't even acknowledge the bonds that horses form. Maybe not so much anymore, but back then, people just would say to me, they get over it. Don't worry about it. You need to get rid of a horse, get rid of it. They don't, quit worrying about it. They get over it. And I kept saying to myself, why do we keep doing things to horses that they need to get over? Why can't we respect the who they are intrinsically and who and what they are? So that's the thing that I'm most proud of, is the way we respect them. They have a right to their own life, you know?
Yeah. Well, that makes a lot of sense. And it's interesting you kind of met such resistance from other horse people. Let's see if we can take a call now here. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Melanie Sue Bowles.
Hey, thanks a bunch for taking my call. So this demonstrates not just horses, but animal therapy and a dedication to the environment, which includes animals, right? So you're just giving, you have the capacity and the honor of giving animals a chance to survive in this environment. It's a great thing.
Thank you. Yes, I agree. It's respecting who they are. And Yeah, I appreciate your comment.
Well, I thank you so much for doing that and having the capacity to do it. And the other thing that I wanted to point out is, you know, I didn't know I was a farmer until I became a farmer. You know what I mean? I didn't know that I wanted to live in the country until I lived in the country. And so you're kind of demonstrating that also. It's a wonderful thing. So all you city people out there, take note. Check it out.
Get out to the country. You might be a country person secretly.
Check it out.
Yeah.
There's a few songs on that too. I'll leave that to you, man.
Okay. Well,
not
really
too
great.
Many.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for your call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, yeah, so that's an interesting notion, kind of like what you're saying, too, is that you weren't a horse person, and then you became a horse person. Going against the grain of other horse people, it seems to be in your recollection, of people who said, well, that's not going to work, or that's not how you do it, or, you know, go ahead and separate them. And it's interesting to see what coming to it from not having a horse background, what that actually brings to the process and has brought over all these 30-plus years.
Well, another good example is we do no breeding, of course, and but we've taken in mares who were already pregnant or they had a baby at their side. And we were told, this was when I was, I'm still kind of a novice, well, wrong word, but I had been learning more and more and more, but experienced horse people told me over and over and over that I had to wean the babies at 3 months. Sometimes they'd say 4 months, which was absolutely insane to me. And it is a normal practice in so much horse breeding to take the babies away from the mares at a really, really young age. And I made a vow that I would never take a baby away from the mare. Horses know how to wean their own babies. Yeah. We don't need to intervene.
It's amazing how many things animals are good at that they don't need our help with.
Yeah. And there was just so much stuff I was told that in deep down in my heart, I knew it was wrong. That was one of the things. I could not believe how many people told me a particular baby we had. Where guests would come out to see the sanctuary. When are you going to wean that baby? Better wean that baby. And I would tell them, I'm not. She knows how to wean her own baby.
Yeah, isn't it interesting, though, how you kind of went from, like, these people that moved out here that don't have any horse background to, like, kind of the rogue practitioner, and yet everything you're saying, of course, makes perfect sense, at least to me. And I don't know if any of them were influenced at all by some of what you did and maybe looked differently at some of their hard and fast policies after seeing what you implemented there at the initial sanctuary. But let's say
I've been told quite a few times from people that they stopped weaning their babies and other things that I've voiced my opinion on.
Yeah, I should hope so. I hope people had a chance to learn from you in the same way that you were hoping to learn from them as you first got started. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals, Melanie Sue Bowles.
Hey, always an honor to be on the world's best animal-centered show. Thank you, Duncan. I've always been concerned about whether horses, oxen, mules, donkeys, etc., are just slaves for humans. I'm not sure how domesticated they are, like historically, going back centuries, whether or not a horse is even a naturally evolved animal or would not exist like it is with dogs and cats, except for human breeding, really creating chimeras and mutants that are meant for our pleasure and use. So how do you feel about the traditional use of horses? And, you know, I don't know how many of us would like to have a saddle put on our back, a bit put in our mouth. It has always seemed to me inherently cruel the way we use and treat animals like horses. So what is your opinion of that?
I agree with you in a lot of ways. I am not opposed to riding. I'm not opposed to enjoying a trail ride with your horse. There's been a big swing in kinder equipment, more comfortable equipment for the horse. I know many friends don't even use a bit. They just use a soft halter with nothing in the horse's mouth. And so training is improving. You know, back 30 years ago, and of course longer, some of the training was extremely violent, and there are people who still use abusive methods. But it is changing. It really is. There's so many good people that acknowledge that horses have a life, and I think some of the breeding has been detrimental. Not all of it, but so I agree with you to a degree, but I don't disagree with kindly and humanely enjoying your horse.
Yeah, I think there's kind of a long-standing philosophical divide on that very issue about riding and other things and putting the horse in service of people versus not doing that. And sounds like you've given it a lot of thought. And
well, the horses, like when people come to visit us, and I get almost every single time a visitor comes to see the sanctuary, do you ride them? And I say, no, we don't ride them. These horses have given enough. And horses don't need a job. And that is something that so many horse people have a difficult time with. They think their horse needs to be ridden. I see it all the time on social media. Well, I can't ride my elderly horse, whatever reason, or I don't have time to ride my horse. I feel so guilty. And I don't understand this mindset. Do you think your horse cares that he's not being ridden? I don't get this. But you see it all the time on social media. I'm thinking about hiring someone to come ride him every day. Why? What? Leave him alone.
Yeah, that's swinging pretty far the other direction philosophically, it seems like.
Yeah.
By the way, email came in that we were talking about how you kind of were going against the grain of horse people. And it just says simply, her intuition is embedded in her DNA in person. So that's an interesting observation, I thought.
Yeah, thank you. I like that.
Well, let's take one more call, and then I want to get on to some more reflecting on your 30-plus years of horse rescue. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Melanie Sue Bowles.
Hi, yes. I just want to reiterate what that person put in email, and as well as what the previous caller said. I just want to say I'm highly inspired by your stances on things, and I was going to say I don't want to talk too much because I want to hear more things. You've gone against the grain, so to speak, with so-called horse people. I don't work with horses. I don't really know much about horses, but I work with other sentient beings. And I really applaud the bonding issue and the breeding issue. I think, like you keep saying, these animals, these sentient beings, have a life of their own, and we have no idea how deep it goes, how deeply connected they are to each other, to their herd, as you mentioned. And I wish it translated to dogs and cats. I understand that's not very practical, but I try to keep litter mates together if possible. Thank you.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Yeah, interesting observation. And in fact, that might bring me to something, because I was wondering, with 30-plus years of Proud Spirit under your belt, are there more sort of universal concepts of rescue you can point to that someone just getting started or early in their rescue career, maybe not just horse rescue necessarily, but other forms of animal rescue might find helpful? Like, what did you find were the most challenging aspects of horse rescue that might apply to other animals, not necessarily strictly horses?
Well, animal rescue is an unyielding commitment, and I always advise anyone thinking about doing any kind of animal rescue to seriously, seriously consider everything. The commitment is unyielding. And I know so many rescue organizations that have started up, and within a few years, sometimes less, sometimes a little bit more, and they shut down. They become overwhelmed, and you have to learn how to say no. You can't take in more than the land can handle, the workload you're able to handle, and the financial obligation. And I think that's why we've been so successful, is because I do know when to say no. And You know, we haven't been on a vacation in over 20 years. Literally, we have not been on vacation together in over 20 years.
That's part of the animal rescue world, sadly, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But I'm okay with that. I've accepted that. This is the choice I've made. I cannot tell you how many people get into this and just allow themselves to become overwhelmed. You've got to accept that you're not going to be able to go to your nephew's wedding. You're not going to be able to go out to dinner when you hoped you could. You've got to turn down party invitations. It goes on and on and on. And why, people have asked me, how have Jim and I, been so committed to this? And, you know, it's a difficult thing to answer. It really is. I can't really describe what's in my heart. You know, sometimes this sanctuary has been my undoing, and other times it's been my remaking. It's been my
Can you give me an example in each instance of that? I think that's very notable for the conversation we're having about rescue and your observations and other people who might be thinking about rescue, or, you know, what's involved and what kind of commitment is really required.
Well, I think that the toughest thing is dealing with the actual animal abuse. Seeing a horse, or any animal, of course, suffering, injured, beaten, starved. This is, it takes a toll, the trauma of that. So you have to figure out if you're going to be able to be strong enough to cope with this. Find ways to step away emotionally from the heartbreak and the abuse, you know, but you circle back to the good you're doing. You circle back to that thriving horse or animal that you've led to this transformation.
Yeah. Well, you kind of alluded to a sort of, there was the downside of it, and then there was also the remaking, and kind of, I guess, almost like the salvation part of it. You've experienced both over the years, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Well, let's get on to some other questions. There's a couple other comments that have come in. One says, a horse that needs to be ridden is a Harley Davidson, so that's one observation. And then this question, this emailer is saying, has your guest rescued any horses from slaughterhouse operations?
That's a really tough subject. And there's a lot of opinions about it, and I avoid talking about it too much, but these auction houses that take in horses and then turn around and slaughter was taken out of the United States many years ago. But horses are still slaughtered. They are hauled to Mexico or Canada. And it's a gruesome, gruesome way to die. These auction houses, I don't like to get involved with them. I think they're evil. I think they're misleading. I think they're in it only for the money. The horse's welfare is not even acknowledged. I did, when I first got into this, and I, in my opinion, working with these slaughter auction houses, you're just enabling them. You're feeding their greed, and it's a really tough subject. And I know that I'll get some criticism for this, but no, I won't get involved with them.
With slaughterhouses, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, these slaughter auction houses that take in these horses, and the fault begins with the people that take their horse to these auction houses.
Yeah.
That's where the real fault lies. Anyone who takes an elderly horse or pony or whatever, or an injured horse or pony, or even a healthy one, to these auction houses, they are to blame for these gruesome trailer loads of horses that are hauled then to Mexico or Canada.
All right, well, this is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. I'm speaking with Melanie Sue Bowles, co-founder of Proud Spirit Horse Sanctuary in Wilkesboro, North Carolina. And we're asking Melanie to kind of reflect on 35 some odd years of horse rescue. She's also an accomplished author, and we'll talk about her books before we finish up today for sure. And you're invited to join the conversation. Please call 813-239-9663. Email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. One emailer says, does your guest care to comment on the federal government's relentless war on wild horses out west?
Yeah, I'm so against what the BLM is doing. It's it is at the behest of cattle ranchers who are using our federal lands for free, and it's these herd management areas were set aside for our America's wild horses. And the BLM, I think, is doing a horrible disservice to these horses, rounding them up, which the brutal, horrific roundups where horses die, break their legs, and then in these long-term holding facilities where they just stand on a dirt lot stacked up like dominoes. What a shame. And I think it's, I can't believe, in fact, that it's still going on. It's just horrific.
Well, I'm going to circle back to a little bit more about your world of rescue because, you know, folks in rescue, especially if there's a sanctuary involved, have other significant job duties typically involving advocacy and, of course, a huge one is fundraising. Can you talk about why both are significant? I remember we actually did a show, you and I, specifically about fundraising and just the sort of relentless demands and challenges that go with trying to keep an operation like a sanctuary going and just the obviously endless need to fundraise and fundraise and fundraise. And some people are okay with it. Some people are more cut out for it. Others, some people just aren't cut out for it. And it's just a huge challenge. And that's one of the reasons that you mentioned earlier, people that get out of rescue or that kind of line of work, is that's one of the reasons is they just can't keep up with the fundraising needs.
Yeah, I'm really, really, really bad at fundraising. So
quit your bragging there, Melanie.
It's soul sucking. It really is. It's awful, but it's gotta be done. So I try to stay in a good mindset about it and, just understand that it's something that needs to be done. However, I will say that with our long-term existence and our reputation, it has gotten easier because people trust us. They know us and they trust us. And that's a really, really important thing to know who you're giving your money to. Don't be afraid to ask questions of other 501c3. If you see a 501c3 nonprofit organization, animal welfare, and you like what they're doing, don't be afraid to ask questions and get the answers you want. And any animal rescue organization that won't give you their veterinarian's name, walk away. There's nothing wrong with speaking to the veterinarian who comes out here frequently and knows exactly what's going on and can assure you that your money is going to go to what you hope it goes to, which is the care of the animals.
Yeah, well, so many organizations have popped up over the years that then other organizations have popped up that are evaluating the kind of charitable work that people do and what happens to the money and evaluating those organizations and giving them, you know, basically ratings of, so if people are saying, well, should we give to such and such, what kind of navigator rating do they have or whatever, that helps people decide whether it's indeed to give or whether it's one of those to walk away from. So another question that came in just a moment ago, Melanie, is, does your guest work with any rodeos? I grew up in Fort Myers, and my dad brought us to the Arcadia Rodeo. It was better than a picture show, and it's truly the granddaddy of all rodeos.
Well, we lived right down the road for many years from Arcadia. We lived in Myakka City, and they're exciting, and I have friends that rodeo. I'm not a fan of it. I don't, you know, it's...
Well, there's a lot of cruelty that goes with rodeos, no matter how you slice it, right?
I mean, exactly.
That's kind of indisputable, I think, for many, many moons.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
Yeah, so, well, let's talk, as we're nearing the home stretch of our time here. A gigantic number of horses have been residents of Proud Spirit. Would you have even estimate how many you've cared for over all these years?
Oh, yeah. At one time, our herd numbered in the 70s, but over the years, we've intervened on well over 400 horses, wow, plus llamas, goats, pigs, cats, dogs. Our focus is horses, but we've taken in all kinds of animals. But yes, I have the paperwork on every horse we've taken in, and yeah, it's nearing, it had neared over 400, nearing 500.
Wow, that is a lot of horses to help. That's great. Well, here I have, I think, probably an impossible question then, but let's try anyway. Which horse, if you had to limit it to just one, stole your heart and why?
Oh boy. Well, over the years, it's been different things, or different horses. Right now, we are completely enamored with a horse called Little Pearl. You can see her on my Facebook page. She was near death. We literally thought we were bringing her home to die in peace. Mm-hmm. And boy, that little girl thrived, and she's absolutely stunning now. She's the sweetest horse.
What was her condition when you first got there, where you sounded like it was so dire?
Absolutely emaciated.
Oh.
Utterly, utterly emaciated. You could see the skeletal structure of her neck. Usually when a horse begins to get emaciated, their hip bones stand out.
Yeah.
You begin to see their ribs and their hip bones. But one of the largest muscles in the horse's body is along their neck there, the higher up, not the biggest muscle, but one of the biggest muscles. And when you can see the skeletal structure of their vertebrae, of the neck, that's near death.
You're in trouble. Yeah, that sounds rough. Wow, but Little Pearl rallied, it sounds like, under your care.
Oh, she's stunning. Yeah. She's absolutely beautiful, and she's very sweet.
that's great. And talk to me, we'll take a little aside, then we're going to get into books in our final moments here. But tell me about donkeys and the role they play in the herd.
We have taken in, nine donkeys over the years. And they are just, they're part of the herd. They mingle with the horses, and
they get along generally good, right? But sometimes,
yeah. Donkeys get a bad rap, but they're pretty cool animals.
Is their bad rap?
People say they're stubborn, they're difficult to work with, and I don't find that at all. I think donkeys are incredibly sweet, and I think they're very easy. I've loved all of our donkeys.
That's great. So we've made reference a few times to being you're being the author of several books, which again, back to what we also talked about, the intense demands of running a sanctuary and rescuing animals. It's pretty unusual for people to be able to turn out books or find the time to do the kind of writing you've done. So first of all, how did you get started, and how did you figure out where you could find the time with all the responsibilities of the sanctuary and horses coming and going and dire situations of one kind or another, I'm sure, popping up, that kind of had to cast everything aside and get right to that horse at that moment?
I began writing just for myself. I would write the stories of the horses. It was cathartic for me. Okay. I would just chronicle how they came to us, how I found them, how they came to us, and their recovery. And I had about 18 stories, and I had no intention of doing anything with them. I just did it for myself. I enjoyed writing. I've always enjoyed writing. No intention of getting published, but I showed the stories to a friend of mine, and when she gave me the folder back, she said, "You need to get these published." And this, again, this is way before social media, way before Google. I didn't have a clue how to get published.
Yeah.
And I don't think people can kind of forget what it was like before Google and social media. I didn't even know where to begin to look how to get published. But I kind of started warming up to the idea of trying to get them published. And I started researching publishers that would accept nonfiction stories. And I happened to find a couple, and I sent them a query letter with the idea of the entire book and some sample chapters. And the third one I queried offered me a contract.
That's great. That's hitting pretty early, and that's fantastic.
Yeah, it was kind of shocking, but my motivation for wanting to get published after my friend suggested it was to help spread the word about what horses need and deserve, and that, you know, they don't need a job. They deserve to just be who they are. That's fine if you want to humanely and kindly ride your horses, but they don't need a job, and I just wanted to get the stories out there to try to reach more people. And after that, I started writing feature articles for glossy print magazines and online magazines after the internet came around.
Yeah.
So I've written dozens of feature articles. And, you know, my motivation for starting the sanctuary was because I felt we were failing our horses. And so I did all this, wrote these books, articles. We were on PBS. PBS did a full-length documentary about us. And 30 years later, after all this time, we are still failing our horses. And I thought to myself, I need to reach kids. And that was the motivation for writing the two kids' books about, you know, I wanted to write a character that kids would hopefully want to emulate. The character in my kids' books loves animals, loves horses, desperately wants a horse. And I hope I can reach some kids about what horses deserve.
Well, that's great. You kind of answered one of my final questions without me even asking it, but that's great. I wasn't quite sure how that transition happened, but that makes sense, and that's great. And I think that's pretty much at the end of our time here. But we've been speaking with Melanie Sue Bowles. Again, the sanctuary is Proud Spirit Horse Rescue. The website is horsesofproudspirit.org. And that's where you can find out information about the sanctuary, stuff we've talked about, stuff we didn't get a chance to talk about, including more specifically the books. But Melanie, thanks again for joining us on Talking Animals and for all your great work saving better part of 500 horses and helping them have a better life.
Thank you for having me. So good to talk to you again.
Likewise. Thanks again. Coming up later on today's program, I'll speak with Doug Boer about the Stand Up for Dogs, an event related to National Dog Fighting Awareness Day tonight at the Dog Bar in St. Petersburg. This is part of the effort to pass the Bipartisan Fight Act, and there's a lot on tap for the evening, and we'll have more on that in just a moment with Doug Boer. Right now, though, we're going to step into the Comedy Corner with Joe Zimmerman and his part of his classic piece, at least, called Pet Snakes, in today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals on WNF.
I have a phobia of snakes. That's normal. It's weird that people have pet snakes when there's so many fluffy pet options available. How does that go? You want the puppy? Wants to be your best friend. It's a rescue. Or you could get the cold-blooded reptile that's banging its head against the glass. Sure looks like it hates you. It's the opposite of a rescue. It's an attack. It's actually what we rescued the rescue from, so that's why we keep them separated. With bulletproof glass. Oh, you want more information on the limbless serpent? That surprises me. Let's see. I know it has infrared vision like the Predator monster. And it's been the symbol for evil since the beginning of time. Which seems like a red flag.
That was Joe Zimmerman in today's Comedy Corner with part of a piece called Pet Snakes, taken from his album, Smiling at Wolves. Now it's time to speak with Doug Boer about Stand Up for Dogs, especially evening geared to National Dog Fighting Awareness Day. Tonight at the Dog Bar in St. Petersburg. Anyone who cares about dogs should really, I think, care about this. So to learn more, let's welcome Doug Boer to Talking Animals on WNF. Morning, Doug.
Hi, Duncan. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thanks for joining us on Talking Animals. So dog fighting is a kind of an awful shadowy enterprise that happens below many people's radar. Give us a sense of how it works and what kind of locations and what's the current status kind of dogfighting that we should be fighting against.
Yeah, dogfighting is not gone. It's just gone underground and online.
Yeah.
So a lot of dogfighting is still illegal in the United States in all 50 states and under federal law, but it's not illegal overseas. A lot of places like Thailand and the Philippines, and a lot of these dogfights get over the internet, streamed over the internet into the United States, and people actually bet on it. As disgusting as that is, and the Fight Act is what we're pushing. It's a bipartisan bill going through Congress right now that outlaws this kind of activity. You know, when these dogfighting laws were originally made, you know, you didn't have the internet like you have it today. So, you know, laws have to be updated to keep up with the times, so to speak.
So the Fight Act would obviously outlaw dogfighting. What are the specifics? I mean, does it have real teeth in it? Because sometimes things come along and they're a good idea, but they don't have enough teeth in it to really affect much change.
Yeah, it has a forfeiture statute in it where the federal government can seize property used in animal fighting. You know, like, for example, if you're having a dogfight or a cockfight in a barn, they could come in and seize it like they do with cars and boats and stuff like that and drugs.
Okay.
You know, with drugs.
Yeah.
It also gives citizens civil authority to sue law enforcement for not investigating, you know, animal fighting things, because a lot of these things get reported and law enforcement doesn't investigate. So it gives the citizens more power to make sure that these things get, you know, investigated. So I mean, it does have some teeth to it.
That's great.
So, yep.
So what will happen at tonight's Stand Up for Dogs? I should quickly note that, of course, we're obviously into talking animals here at the show.
Yep.
And we do play a weekly comedy piece. But in this case, Stand Up for Dogs, I gather, does not involve dogs telling jokes or...
No, it's an animal advocacy event. We're raising money for the Humane Society of Tampa Bay and Compassion Kind Foundation.
Yeah.
Two great animal rescue organizations. Basically, if you care about animals, even a little... Look up the Fight Act and come out and stand up for dogs, because your voice actually matters here.
Yeah, so I gather one element of this evening involves special guest speakers. Maybe tell me a little bit about one or more or two of those.
We have, unfortunately, Anna Paulina Luna, who is our congresswoman over here in Clearwater. She was a co-sponsor of the act. She's not going to be able to be here because of the things going on in Congress. Neither are Rick Scott or any of our senators. But I do have Linda Cheney coming. She's a state senator, state representative, rather. And she's been a huge animal advocate on the state level.
So, well, that's great.
It can help to push things into the federal arena. So.
Absolutely. Anything like that gives it extra credibility and carries weight, I think. So that's important.
Yeah. Yep.
So what else should we know about tonight, Doug?
We're going to have raffles. We have some great raffle prizes. We have a couple of hotel stays in Orlando that we're raffling off. We have a certificate for lunch with Mayor Jane Castor.
Oh, wow.
The winner can win lunch with her. And we have a similar thing with Commissioner Dave Eggers over here in Pinellas County, who's a huge animal advocate. And, you know, we'll have a Roxy's Coffee gift basket. And
now we're talking Roxy's.
Yeah. The most important thing, I saved it for last.
Yeah, we should note, of course, that Doug's intimately involved with Roxy's Coffee, but they do so much good work on behalf of animals and stuff that it's a lot more than just another coffee company. So.
Yeah, we care more about the mission than the bottom line. So
that's great.
You know, we want to end dog fighting. So,
Doug, we're just in the last moment here. So where would people want, if they want to find out about tonight's event, is there a website or a social media page you could direct them to?
You could go to roxyscoffee.com.
Okay.
And under our event section on the menu, it's about us, and then under that is event.
And is there another event on the horizon? Some people might just be hearing about this today, and it's tonight. Maybe they have plans, of course. Is there something else coming along the pike that people could put in their calendar now?
Yeah, I have an event actually on Sunday. It's called Apple's Market. It's Apple, which was a dog that was abandoned in Largo that got hit by a car when they were trying to rescue it.
Okay.
It has about $13,000 worth of medical bills.
Wow.
We're holding we're part of 30 vendors in a market at the park on 66th Street, the Park Restaurant at 66th Street.
Okay. And I assume they can find that on the Roxy's Coffee website as well, right?
It's on there. It's on there as well. Yep.
That's fantastic.
There's a lot of events coming up.
That's great, Doug. Well, thanks for joining us again. It's Santa for Dogs. Yeah. Now you got me saying coffee. Santa for Dogs, National Dog Fighting Awareness Day at the Dog Bar in St. Pete tonight from 6 to 8:30 p.m. So thanks so much for joining us today on Talking Animals and all your great work, Doug.
Yes, thank you, sir. Thank you.
Coming up on WNF, it's The Conversation, the great show hosted by Mauro Nunez and Joe King Carter. After that, it's The Scoop, WNF's brief news recap. Then we shift back to music programming with Sam Vaughn holding forth from 1 to 3, followed by Nancy C hosting the Wednesday Traffic Jam from 3 to 6 p.m., and then more great music after that here on 88.5 WNF. So again, just want to remind you, as we said at the top of the show, that next Wednesday, April 15th, again, I'll be away, but the show will be hosted by the great Bev Capshaw. Her guests that day will be Robin Mazo and Nadia Palmino, Virgin Cats of Tampa Bay, doing a lot of great work to encourage adoption of Hillsborough County's Pet Resource Center. So check out things otherwise on TalkingAnimals.net, and we'll see you next 2 weeks from today here on Talking Animals.